53.
Amend contract with Motivate International, Inc., formerly Alta Bicycle Share, Inc., to implement the bike share system not to exceed $2,175,000.
Commissioner Novak.
Colleagues, two of the greatest threats we face as a city, as a country, as a species, are climate disruption and rising healthcare costs. Bicycles are effective weapons against both of those threats, because if you're riding a bike, you're getting yourself into better shape, and you're less likely to have expensive healthcare problems. And if you're riding a bike, you're not using fossil fuels or emitting greenhouse gases. A large number of cities across the country and the world have adopted bike share as part of their bicycle infrastructure, and they have found that bike share does contribute to improving health and reducing carbon emissions. Both Denver and, I believe, and DC have surveyed their bike share members and have found that 25% to 30% say that they're driving less, and 25% to 30% say that they have actually lost weight. Now, when I mention these other cities, it highlights the fact that Portland is actually late to the bike share party. Not only Denver and Washington, DC and Minneapolis have adopted bike share, so have cities like Indianapolis and Fargo and Fort Worth. But there are advantages sometimes to not being first. We had an experience with that recently in Bureau of Transportation with replacing our street light bulbs with LED lights. We waited to do that after some others had already done it. Technology got better and less expensive. We're saving more money on our streetlights because we waited until there were advances in technology and the price dropped. The same thing is happening with bike share. Under our old contract, we expected to have to spend over $4 million in order to launch a 750-bike system. Now, because of advantages to technology, we've got better, cheaper technology, and because we have a contract now with Motivate, where they're taking on more of the financial responsibility, we're now proposing to launch a 600-bike system with just the $2 million that we've had sitting from a federal grant for the past several years. So, as the saying goes, good things come to they who wait. I want to take just a minute to talk about the kind of trips that we can expect to see on bike share. The other day, I was on the bus, and I overheard somebody saying to her friend, "Why didn't I see you on the bus yesterday?" And her friend said, "Well, I had a doctor's appointment in the middle of the day, so I drove." I think that's an example of the kind of thing that will happen with bike share, where somebody who normally takes transit now might take their car if they think they're going to have to go to their doctor during the day and their doctor's office is not on transit. But if bike share is available and the doctor's office is within a reasonable bike ride, the same person might still take transit down as usual and then ride a bike instead of a car to the doctor's appointment. Most of the bike share trips that we will have will be by Portland residents, but some of them will be taken by tourists. Bike share has become a tourist amenity that travelers across the country have come to expect. And I am not always a big advocate of investing lots of money in tourism economic development. In fact, I think it was the only vote in the council against a multi-multi-million-dollar tax subsidy to Hyatt for building the Convention Center Hotel. But investing $2 million in federal money that we've had for several years in order to adopt a tourist amenity that many people have come to expect, I think is a reasonable investment. And with that, I will shut up and turn the microphone over to Director Leah Treat.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much. My name is Leah Treat. I am the director of the Portland Bureau of Transportation. And you have the PowerPoint up?
Carla's getting it. There you go.
All right. Next slide. Thank you. Today we have an amendment before you to allow the city to launch the bike share system for the city of Portland in the summer of 2016. PBOT is presenting to the City Council an amended contract with Portland's bike share operator, Motivate. It is the nation's leading bike share operator. The amendment includes a more detailed business plan and a new equipment supplier, Social Bicycles, otherwise known as SOBI. The system is going to have, as Commissioner Novick said, 600 bikes, and our service area is going to cover the entire central city. This will include downtown, Old Town Chinatown, Inner Northwest, Goose Hollow, South Waterfront, West End, Pearl District, Central East Side, Rose Quarter, Lloyd District, and Inner North Portland. And I'm really excited today to talk about this new proposed bike share system because we are going to be launching a system that is incredibly innovative, is incredibly sustainable, and is affordable. The smart bike technology that we are using is going to make finding and reserving and parking a bike much easier and much more convenient. We are aiming to be the most sustainable bike share system in the world. Portland is utilizing SOBI's technology to reduce the system's operating costs and reduce the use of vans to move bikes to high-demand locations. And also, we'll be offering a very clear and intuitive pricing system that is going to be one of the most accessible price points to use of any bike share system in the United States. After I speak, Margie and Steve are going to get more into the details of the operations. So some of the benefits of bike share. Bike share is going to bring new people to biking, especially women, and this is going to help the city meet its climate action goal. It's also going to strengthen our transit system by creating last-mile connections. And also, bike share is going to reduce congestion and help freight movement by reducing driving. Bike share is also a proven tool to increase biking and reduce driving. Currently operating in over 60 cities, many systems are growing. And I have seen it firsthand in Chicago and in D.C. with their incredibly successful systems. But bike share is not only a big city phenomenon. Denver bike sharing members reported reducing their driving by 37%. Bike share also supports Portland's very ambitious livability and climate action goals. The Portland plan calls for 75% of Portlanders to use transit, to bike, or walk to work, and bike share will help us meet those goals. I'm now going to hand this off to Margie, and she's going to talk more about the business structure, and Steve is going to dive in after that on the details of the operations. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Margie Bradway. I am the Active Transportation and Safety Division Manager for PBOT, and I'm very happy to be here today to talk about bike share. I'm going to spend a little time walking through the steps of the contract that you approved and the contract that you're now amending. So I want to remind you that the city conducted a competitive request process, an RFP, back in 2012. Alta won that contract. Today we are amending that same contract that was approved by this council in December of 2012. So what has changed between the time that contract is before you and what the contract that you have today? So just big picture, first of all, Alta's name changed to Motivate and was bought out by a different company, Bikeshare Holdings, and I'll walk you through that. The other thing that's changed is actually the city leadership has changed. We now have a new mayor and new commissioner, and our leader, Leah Treat, who has a lot of experience in bike share. And also the technology, as Commissioner Novak pointed out, has changed. So all of those reasons, the parties have changed, the technology changed, we came together to look at how we need to amend this contract and what were our priorities in that contract. So going in, and this is, again, big picture here, our priorities were no local money in for the term of the contract. Our priorities were a sustainable operating system, so one that we could use smart bikes and rebalance better. And we also had equity at the forefront of our priorities when we started to amend this contract. And I'm really pleased to say that Motivate has been an amazing partner. We brought those priorities to those soon, and the Motivate's Vice President of Business Development is here, Justin Ginsburg, who will speak a little bit later. But I want to just reiterate that they have been an excellent partner in these contract negotiations. They have top-of-the-line leadership. They had a new executive director come in, Jay Walder, who has run transit systems in New York, Hong Kong and London. They staffed up and got more people working on issues that we care about in terms of production line and delivery. They have a strong financial backing. So Ulta changed its name to Motivate, was bought out by Bikeshare Holdings. That company is owned by Rex Adventures, which also owns real estate and sports equipment. So this company that we're working with now is quite different. But probably the most important to me and our team was that they were willing to work with us on innovation. They were willing to try new technologies, willing to embrace our climate change goals in terms of rebalancing, understood our equity goals. And we believe that the contract that we're bringing to you to amend today reflects all of those priorities. And so to be clear, Motivate has agreed to operate the system for 3 years with no local money. Motivate is also taking a hit on the launch. They've agreed to eat $225,000 of the launch money going in, which we really appreciate. We will be using the match for the federal requirement to go into the planning and launch on our side. The federal grant that still sits in the MTIP at the metro level requires a 10.27% match. That match is paid for staff time on the planning and the launch, and comes out of our budget using TDM funds, which was left over from Betsy credits. If you want more information about that, I can go into that. But
a mouthful of acronyms.
I know. Sorry. I'm trying to be quick and punchy. But I just want to kind of, and I know you'll have questions. So if you want me to dive deeper into that, I can. But I want to make sure Steve talks about more about the operation. So lastly, I want to hit on our supplier, Sobi. So a little bit about Sobi. They are a leader in the Bikeshare innovation. They were the first one to come up with the smart bikes. They and Steve is going to go into the bikes, but we have faith in them. They are operating in several cities successfully. Probably the largest launch that they've had this past year is in Hamilton, Ontario. Is it?
Yes.
Okay. And Steve's our Bikeshare expert. Again, they've been a great partner. We did a long due diligence investigation into their ability to deliver, and we are very pleased with the results of that due diligence. Again, I think I've kind of hit on most of this. So to remind you, there's the $2 million federal grant that will go into buying the bikes. So the city of Portland will own the assets. We also received a $42,000 grant for a station at Union Station. That was a separate grant process, ODOT, that we're combining in, and I've already talked about the match. The user revenue, the prospective sponsorship money will go into operating the system in the first 3 years. So what does that mean in terms of timeline? Do you have a question, Commissioner?
Yeah, just on that previous slide.
Go ahead. Yeah.
There's still 133,000. The amount in the ordinance is $2,175,000.
Yes. So when we, with the feds, when we get a $2 million grant, that's how much they reimburse. They reimburse at essentially 90% of a project cost. So if you have a $2 million project, they'll reimburse you at $1.8 million. And so since we have a $2 million grant, the total project cost is roughly $2.2 million. We've spent a little bit of our existing match, already our local match, on staff time for planning for the project. So the procurement amount is the total cost of that of the project, $2.2 million, minus the local match that we've already put toward that project. So that gets you to the 2.175 procurement authority.
Is that additional 133,000 going to Motivate, or is that?
That would go toward our staff time to cover the project. The only way that it could actually go towards equipment within the procurement authority is if we had a private sponsor that came on and wanted to buy more equipment, but that would not go, that's money not going toward Motivate, that's going to covering our staff costs.
Thank you.
Okay, and so today we're bringing you, or we're presenting, obviously, the contract. You will be voting on it next week. If that vote is successful, of course, this is a proposal, then we would launch our public participation plan. Before you is a timeline, and probably the most important thing on this timeline is the purchase order. In order to make the launch date
in July, which if you think about when is a good time to launch a bike share system, it would be the summer. We need to put that purchase order in December. And so that's why we are here today before you to make sure that we have the timing right to place that purchase order. Once that purchase order goes in, then we will continue to do our public outreach and work on the details of the station planning. Motivate will hire local staff according to our equity guidelines that Steve's going to go into, and then we'll prepare for a launch. It's a big picture of our timeline. And I think at this point, I'm going to hand it over to Steve to dive in a little bit more on the operations.
Great. Thank you, Leah and Margie. So my name is Steve Hoyt McBeth. I'm the Bike Share Project Manager at the City of Portland. Before I begin my comments, I wanted to acknowledge three letters of support that you received from groups. Oregon Tradeswomen, Executive Director Connie Ashbrook submitted you a letter. Travel Portland submitted a letter as well as the Community Cycling Center. So for me, this is a great honor to work on this project. I believe that bike share is something that's going to provide us a tangible solution to some of our city's pressing transportation and climate change problems, just as Commissioner Novick mentioned. And I've worked on bike share for several years, sometimes seemingly several long years. But I've spent most of my time at PBOT working with employers and commuters to engage them in shifting their trips from driving to transit, walking, and biking. And in Portland, we have one of the very best demand management programs in the country. We're nationally recognized. But I can tell you that shifting people's behavior, getting them to change, is very, very difficult work. We are literally physiologically evolved to resist change. The habit is actually how we get to have such a big brain. It's so that we do this. So it's tough work. So the University of Scranton just did a survey that found that 8% of people actually achieve their New Year's resolutions. 8%. So if we had, I'm not sure how many people we have here, just do the math. So it's tough work to get people to change. So Commissioner Novick mentioned that we're seeing people change their behavior. Leah mentioned that in Denver, we have 37% of people reducing their driving by 37%. So what is going on here? So why can people not change behavior that they say they want to change, like their resolutions, and yet with bike share, when they join bike share, they actually begin to shift in biking in very large numbers. So this is, I can see Commissioner Saltzman's eyes that this is not a very well done graph, but this is from the Mineta Institute and the UC California Berkeley. They did a research of Minneapolis bike share members, and they asked them, how much are you biking before they join and how much afterwards? And essentially what this says is that after people joined bike share in Minneapolis, they almost doubled how much they biked frequently. Like almost, it went up to about 3/4 of the people were biking more than once a week.
I applaud this slide because it has at the center of it my favorite Ellsworth Kelly print.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Fish. I will make a note of that and for future. And as Commissioner Novick also mentioned, the members in Washington, D.C. system reported losing weight. 30% of them reported losing weight, even though they weren't intending to lose. So what's the special sauce here with bike share? Why is bike share, when we join a gym, that doesn't mean we're going to lose weight. When we buy vegetables, that doesn't mean we're going to eat them. So why is it that when people join bike share, they actually begin biking in much larger numbers? And I think that this slide, again from the Mineta Institute, really hits at it. The reason people like bike share is not because it's good for the environment. It's not because the bikes look cool. They like it because it's convenient. And what convenience says to us is that it works. That people can get from point A to point B conveniently and affordably in a really easy way. So as Leah mentioned, there's over 60 cities with bike share right now. So bike share, as it is right now, is good. If we took just kind of bike share off the shelf and plopped it into Portland, we'd be doing okay. But we know that we can do better in Portland. And specifically, we can increase the number of people using bike share. We can lower the cost to the city through leveraging the technological advancements of social bikes, smart bike technology. And we can reduce the carbon footprint through system innovations. So I'm going to skip that slide. So let's talk first about pricing. Our pricing model is meant to attract even more people to bicycling, to strengthen the system's economies to make it more financially self-sufficient, while at the same time making it more accessible to more people. So our pricing model is grounded in research done by Professor Jennifer Dill at Portland State University, which found that 60% of Portlanders are interested in biking, but they're just sitting on the fence. We call them that 60% the interested but concerned. So they say they want to bike, but year after year, they don't bike. So it doesn't matter how transformative some tool is if you can't get people to try it. So if you can excuse my parlance, we want to get the interested concerned, we want to get their butts off the fence, and we want to get them into bike seats. And we think that creating a low-cost, single-use fare product is one of the strategies to achieve that. So in general, if we can just speak in general terms, BikeShare has two main fare products across the country. There's the annual pass, which is targeted at users, and then there's a day pass that anyone can buy but tends to be used almost solely by tourists. So the day pass is usually around in other cities about $7 a day. The annual is around $75. So at $7 a day, that's a great deal for a tourist. If you're coming into the city and you just want to have a special experience in Portland, $7, that's really nothing. That's less than lunch. But that's a lousy deal for a resident or commuter who wants to get across town for a meeting or wants to go bike to meet a friend for dinner. So unless you really, really want to ride a bike, why would you spend $7 when you could spend $2.50 and get there very well on TriMet? Or you could spend that same $7 and probably take a cab or car to go. So when Portland launches, we will have one of the most affordable entry points of any bike share system in the country at $2.50 on average for a 30-minute trip. And I'll get to that on average conditional in a moment here. So we're going to dramatically reduce the cost to casual users in order to get more residents to try bike share. And we know from the data that when people try bike share, that many of them then move on to become annual members because they just see the value proposition that's there. And policy-wise, we really want people to become annual members because we know from the data that once you become an annual member, you tend to bike like crazy. In Denver, about the average amount of trips that an annual member makes is about 60 bike trips a year. So for our climate goals and our transportation goals and our congestion goals, annual membership is really a great gateway for us to meeting some of those. So on the other side of this is the financial sustainability. Council gave us very clear direction dating all the way back to the original vote on the regional flexible funds in 2011 that said no local money would go towards operations. So annual members are great for our policy goals, but they're kind of tough on our financial system because there's, you know, the more you bike, the more wear and tear there is on the system, and there's more work for Motivate to make that work. So part of our pricing strategy is to try to align our usage with our revenue. So while we're dramatically reducing the cost for the new user, we are increasing a bit the cost to that annual member compared to other cities. And the reason, but even though we're doing this, we're raising the annual membership some, we still think we're going to end up with a more accessible system. And you're kind of saying, how can you make it more expensive and more affordable at the same time? And the reason for that is that nearly every U.S. bike share system requires that person who wants to buy, an annual membership to pay for that entire cost in one lump sum. So that's not the way we buy anything. That's not the way we budget. We buy our housing, we buy our phone, we buy our internet, all as a monthly cost. So we believe that since we budget that way anyway, that's how we should budget and pay for bike share. And so we believe in doing so we'll actually create a much more affordable fare product. The city of Philadelphia, Temple University did a focus group with a low-income community, very large African-American community, about bike share when they're trying to figure out their pricing. And I asked them, like, how much do you think bike share should be per month after they talked about the thing? And they said, oh, about the price of a transit pass. So that's about $80. So we're going to be between $10 and $15 a month. So we still think, even by raising the price some, that we actually come up with a really strong value proposition for residents. So let's talk a little bit about the technology, and specifically about social bicycle smart bike technology that both the commissioner and Leah talked about before. So with smart bikes, we think we can get more bikes through cost savings from product innovations, a better customer experience for our users, more flexibility for our operator, and a lower carbon footprint from the system. So smart bikes differ from what are called station-based systems, and in this slide are actually referred to as smart docks, in that smart bikes consolidate all of the technology that is with station-based system that's on the dock and in the kiosk and puts everything on the bike. So the bike kind of becomes very, very powerful in terms of the customer interaction and data. So with smart bikes, you can check out a bike and lock it with or without a bike share dock or rack. And the bike also has active GPS, so we're going to have a wealth of trip data on where Portlanders are riding, which is going to be a very powerful tool in us evaluating where we need to invest our resources. So with all this with smart bikes, Social Bicycles also provides branded racks and kiosks, which we will have 30 branded stations within the service area. So one of the great things that that smart bikes is going to do for us is help to mitigate one of the biggest problems the bike share operators find, which is parking during peak usage. So with a station-based system, you can only park a bike, so not the station we will have, but the station-based system that most other cities have, you can only park a bike at a bike share dock. So if you arrive at a bike share station like this one in Minneapolis in the top left, and it's full, you've got to go to another station to try to find a place to park that bike. So let's just assume for a moment that we had a station-based system and you were biking to a meeting at Fox Tower. And you bike to Fox Tower and you get there and that station is full. So with a station-based system, what you'd have to do is you'd have to get on your on that bike share bike and go and find another station that had an open spot, and you could do that for your smartphone app, and you'd still have to go there, drop that bike up, and then walk back to your walk back to Fox Tower. So that's not going to make for a very happy customer, and it's also very expensive for the operator. To address this, what operators do is they spend about half of their operating budget on what's referred to as rebalancing. And if you look at this photo in the bottom right, you can see it happening in Washington, D.C. And what that means is they move bikes in vans or trucks from high to and from high-demand locations. So this is where smart bike technology and Portland's long history of bike investments are a perfect match. Smart bikes allow the user to park at any bike rack because the lock is built right into the bike. And Portland has the best parking. We have the best bike parking in the nation. In our service area alone, we have over 3,000 public bike racks. So let's go back to that customer that's going to a meeting at Fox Tower. If they were with our smart bike system and they go there and that station happens to be full, they'll have over a dozen racks on the block, on public bike racks on the block face, which they'll be able to pay, which they'll be able to park that bike at. So that makes the system operate a lot better. It keeps our costs down, and it also reduces our reliance on vans. In addition to those 3,000 bike racks, we have 52 bike corrals within the service area. We have over nearly 130 citywide. So Motivate and the city plan to use at least 30 of these corrals as auxiliary bike share stations where both public and private bikes can park. So to be clear, we're going to have 30 branded bike share stations, and then we're going to deputize an additional 30 of these bike corrals where our customers, where kind of public bike share bikes and private bikes can intermix. So by leveraging our previous investments in bike infrastructure, we are able to save around $240,000 on the cost of bike racks. And that savings of $240,000 that we've reinvested into bikes. So we're spending our money on bikes and not on metal. And that's allowed us to grow the size of the system from 450 bikes to 600 bikes. So let's talk about what this means for so smart bikes for Portlanders mean less hassle for parking your bike and lower cost for the city to operate. And it also allows Portland to do what we do best, which is innovating with private partners to create cutting-edge sustainable practices. And just as in the 1990s and early 2000s, the city partnered with architects, designers, and developers to become a national leader in green building, Motivate and the city plan to use Portland as an innovation lab for sustainable bike share practices. So you recall those vans in that other picture moving all around the city trying to balance these station-based systems. Through our planned program and smart bike innovations, Motivate will cut the number of rebalancing vehicles that it uses for our system from 4 to just 1. So instead of relying on carbon to solve our logistics problems, we are looking to technology and the partnership with our customers to create a more efficient system. We're going to engage our customers with price incentives and fees to encourage people to bring bikes to high-demand locations. And you might recall earlier I said $250 for 30 minutes on average for that one-time use ticket. After 6 months, the contract also allows Motivate to explore dynamic pricing to help balance the system, similar to what the city is studying in terms of with metered parking. And during peak usage, this could result in the price of that ticket going up to a maximum of $5 for 30 minutes. But on average, that price will be $2.50. So if the price ever went up during a high peak usage, it would also, of course, have to come down during the other areas. And so Motivate has also implemented in Boston and New York City the use of bike trailers to move quickly and sustainably throughout the system. And lastly, I want to say on this rebalancing issue is that there's a rich set of data that we're going to get from bike share because every one of these bikes has GPS right on it. And we're going to be reaching out to our research and technology partners to explore the development of predictive models. So as opposed to reacting to what's happening, we can actually plan for it. And Motivate actually is already doing this with researchers at Cornell. And I can't wait to get our local software engineers and scientists going on this. And so lastly, and most importantly, BikeShare is not going to be successful unless it benefits a cross-section of our community. We're very proud, as Margie mentioned before, about our work with Motivate, the coalitions of communities of color, and Verity to create an ambitious equity agenda for the project. Motivate has committed to to paying its employees a living wage and to partnering with local workforce employment training organizations, such as Oregon Tradeswoman, to ensure that at least 50% of its workforce is composed of women and Portlanders from underserved communities. And aside from providing one of the lowest price points in the nation for bike share, Motivate is committed to deeply discounting 500 memberships to community partners, and we're also exploring a cash-only fare product to provide underbanked and unbanked Portlanders access to the system, and those unbanked is someone who doesn't have a credit card or debit card or a bank account. And so lastly, I'd say that our service area includes some of the region's lowest income census tracts, and so we are striving to site stations near affordable housing and service centers. So thank you very much for sticking with me for all that. I'm obviously very excited about this. I want to turn this over at this time to Justin Ginsburg, who's the Vice President of Business Development at Motivate, our partners.
Thank you, Steve. As Steve said, I am the Vice President for Business Development at Motivate. I'm going to go through this, I think, pretty quickly since a lot of my points have been touched on, and I know your time is valuable. So just to provide a little more information about Motivate, Margie touched on who our backers are. It's the largest urban real estate developer in America, the largest affordable housing developer in New York City and San Francisco, and Equinox, which is an operator of fitness clubs across the country. So with this backing, we really have the resources to ensure the stability, investment, and innovation to make our government partners happy and make our customers happy. Next slide.
I'm sorry.
With the new leadership that we have at Motivate, we've really been able to turn things around over the last year and start to solve a lot of the issues that have constrained the bike share industry for the past couple years. We've grown by over 4,000 bikes just this past summer in Chicago, New York, and Columbus. We are expanding Washington, D.C., and Boston this fall. And we'll deliver an additional 11,000 bikes in New York and San Francisco over the next 2 years. We are ready to commit these resources and this energy into making Portland a similar success story in 2016. Motivate has a track record of operating systems with no public subsidy. New York City has operated for 2 years with no public funding, relying only on user revenue and sponsorship for a viable business model that is now delivering a high level of service and significant system expansion. We believe in this business model, and we are using it to expand the Bay Area by 6,300 bikes and to launch a new system in Jersey City next week. In Jersey City, we set a record for per-bike sponsorship contribution and believe that it shows the demand for bike share sponsorship in mid-sized cities like Portland. We're bringing to bear our sponsorship experience from these other cities to Portland, and we have already received significant interest from the business community for organizations that want to become part of Portland's urban fabric and make a positive community impact. As a company, we really believe in Portland. This will be preaching to the choir, so I'll go through this pretty quickly, but we're very excited about the tourism market. It seems like a must-do for people traveling and visiting Portland is to get on a bike, and this is going to make that a lot easier for people. We also know that Portland's embraced multiple modes of transit. We think public transit, car sharing, and bike sharing all work very well together. Bike sharing is a natural solution to the last mile, first mile challenge, and as Commissioner Novick talked about, you know, we'll offer people the opportunity to avoid driving into work to run those errands during the day. The active lifestyle and the innovation that Portland has had in bicycle infrastructure is a real precondition to our success. In many cities, you know, Motivate's out there trying to convince people to get on a bike. I think in Portland, a lot of people already ride bikes, and now it's convincing people to ride bikes more or to use bike share specifically. So we really think we have a great environment and a great civic culture to make bike share a success. We are grateful to the City Council for considering this proposal, and we look forward to working together and working with PBOT to make it a success.
Questions?
I have a few. Could Leah come back for a sec? Can we substitute you out? I have just a number of questions, sort of short answer, and probably anticipates, hopefully doesn't anticipate some of the testimony, but may. First of all, to you, Leah, and to Steve, thank you for the very collaborative way you've engaged the council in this process and the creative proposal that you've come before us, working within the constraints that you were given. I think it's pretty extraordinary. Just some quick questions. One of the slides said that 150% of minimum wage. Is that the state minimum wage or the federal minimum wage?
That's the state minimum wage.
So the higher, although it wasn't bumped, it's not going to be bumped up this year, it's still significantly higher than the federal, so thank you. Leah, to you, I was in D.C. recently and noticed how spectacularly successful bike share is. D.C. has subway, bus, has all kinds of amenities, plus the downtown sort of tourist area is very walkable. So I would have thought D.C. would have been challenging because there's already so much other infrastructure for alternative transportation. Why is it successful in D.C.?
I believe that it is successful in D.C. because it is a last-mile connector for the robust transit system that exists there. While there is a great metro system, a great bus system, it doesn't go into all the neighborhoods, and you have to actually walk quite a bit to get to your stops. Also, D.C.'s great transit system is also plagued by a lot of delays, and bike share is an incredibly convenient and fast option to get around a very small geographic area.
Okay. And ditto San Francisco and New York, where I visited recently. I mean, bike share is blowing up in those cities, and everybody seems to be on a bike going around. So the two criticisms that have been raised either in the media or in emails I've received, I want to give you a chance just to respond to them. The first is there any particular unique risk of theft to the product in the system that you're asking us to embrace?
I'd be happy to take that. So when I first started working on bike share, I was a bike share skeptic, and one of the things I was concerned about was this theft issue. And so everyone was naturally, and it's really, and Justin could probably speak to this from his own experience, it's really become a non-issue. The bikes are unique. The parts of them are often unique, so there's just not a market for theft of them. And, you know, you can't take them to a chop shop because the pieces just don't fit anything else. And the locking system and the credit card backing that you need to use the system have all three worked together to have extremely low theft rates.
Thank you. Leah, the second question I had has to do with sort of third year and beyond. How do you quantify the risk to taxpayers of having to cover any portion of the operating costs after 3 years?
There will be no risk to taxpayers to cover the last 2 years of the system. We are required by the feds to operate for 5 years since we're using federal funds. We don't have any experience in the nation of a system failing after 3 years. And in our research, the only comparable city we found was Boston. And after 3 years of their operations, they had to go back out and do another RFP for their system. And when they went back out after 3 years, they got even better terms with their contract for the last two. But again, we will not be putting any additional local money into the system. And should we be in the position of not being able or having to go back out, not getting favorable terms, we will be able to operate the system and rebalance to user revenue. And that is the worst case scenario.
Just to elaborate on that, I mean, we are required to operate a bike share system for 5 years after taking the federal money, but we are not required to operate a particular bike share system. We are not required to continue operating a 600 bike system at the end of the 3 years. So if we have to scale back the system in order to meet available revenues after 3 years, then we would do that.
Yeah, I'm reminded that one of the first hearings I attended as a rookie commissioner, I was sitting next to Dan, and we were getting a presentation on light rail. I think it was actually the Orange Line. And it was a big vision, big aspiration. We were being asked to make a big commitment, but there was no plan to help to pay for it. So I turned to Dan, who has a reputation of being the cheapskate on the council, and I said, how do we say yes to this? And he said, this is the way we do transportation planning. We line up the vision, we get all the pieces in place, we get in the queue for competitive federal funding, and we always get to the finish line. So there's risk in it. All I'm saying is there's risk in everything we do that's bold. This sounds like there's a very modest risk.
Yes, and Commissioner Fisher, if I could just go back to Commissioner Novak's opening comments, which was, it's nice sometimes not to be first, and this time we're going to be 65th. Is that we have a lot of data nationally to look at, and I think that Leah's comments kind of reflect our confidence based on the market in other cities.
Thank you. My last question: I know you're very enthusiastic about all this data that you're going to be generating, but some of the members of the public are going to be concerned about privacy. So how do we balance your desire for all this good data and the privacy rights of customers?
Well, thank you very much for bringing that up, Commissioner Fish. We had a meeting with Jennifer Cooperman, our city treasurer, and one of her staff, actually. We actually now at the city have a PII, personal identification, identifying information expert who makes sure that the city doesn't go afoul of sharing people's private information. So our contract with Motivate is kind of based on the direction that we received from our expert, and the data that we will actually give out, and that data will be out publicly, will be anonymized by just by kind of gender, by, you know, your basic demographic information, and the last bit of that, any trip that you make will be kind of sliced off, so we can't actually see, aha, that person's going to that person's house or whatever. So it's the data, the power of the data is in aggregate form. There's not a lot of power in that data at the individual level.
So we're not going to be tracking people's movements and then making that public. It's going to be aggregate data.
It's aggregate data, yes.
And just to be clear, Motivate will have that. Our operator needs to know where the bikes are. But there is, as part of the contract, kind of a firewall, more or less, between the city staff and Motivate so that it's coded by the time we see it.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I had some questions. So I think you know I'm sort of the reigning skeptic about bike share. I think I was one that authored the language in 2011 that said no government operational subsidy. And it's not because I'm necessarily opposed to bike share. I just don't think it's a nice thing to have. It's not an essential thing to have with respect to our limited transportation dollars. I do want to say that I'm very impressed with the company you're working with now. And the issues that I talked about when we met, I want to talk about on the record. So as I mentioned in our meeting, one of my big concerns is, you know, somebody rents a bike, cracks their head open, and they're going to sue the city. So tell me about what kind of protections we have in this contract to prevent the city from being sued under those situations.
I knew you were going to ask that question.
I know you did.
So we are prepared. So if you turn to Section 11 of the contract, and I think it's worth it at this point, and I want to be clear that we're bringing the contract to you in of form. So this is not, we're still working with our attorneys. We have great attorneys. Lisa Gramp and Ben Walters have been our attorneys and been with us every step of this. You will see the insurance and indemnity, and there's lots of different types of liabilities that were covered. And I don't want to kind of distract you, but, you know, typical commercial property workers' comp. 11.6 indemnity from liability claims. The general indemnity language is there to Motivate shall hold harmless, defend, and indemnify the city of Portland and the state of Oregon, their officers, agents, and so on. I want to be honest, though, that we are still working with our attorneys on one word in the exception. So this is not totally, there's some exceptions, and Commissioner Novick raised this indemnity clause as well as you, that we don't feel like we're completely finished, and that's that be caused by negligence or willful conduct. Lisa Gramp, our attorney, it would prefer it to just say conduct. So we are literally down to one word in the contract that we're working on. She's not here today. But I want
it to be addressed in the intervening week.
Yes, okay. This is going to be addressed in the intervening week. We, of course, would not sign any contract that our attorneys aren't 100% behind. And of course, that is okay with you. But because you council members and Commissioner Novick and Salzman have really wanted us to have a strong indemnity clause, we are making this as strong as possible. And this issue was also raised in Uber, and so we're watching it very closely.
Let's be clear to Dan's question. It doesn't prevent someone from suing us.
No,
enterprising
absolutely
lawyer
not.
Could very well put the city as a defendant just to see whether they get lucky. But
right.
a blanket indemnity says that they'll cover our costs.
Correct. And so they will cover our cost. If someone gets hurt, they will cover our cost. There are a few exceptions to the rule that mostly have to do with the acts of whether staff employees are involved. So that's what we're talking about. But the general indemnification is there.
Okay. So the other question I had was why, and maybe Motivate wants to answer this question, but why is Motivate electing to do a 3-year coverage versus a 5-year coverage? Was that our decision?
And that was not an elected. That was it was a negotiated term. And the negotiated term was, you know, the big picture again, Motivate is willing to take all the risk in the first 3 years. That's millions of dollars. And so it was a matter of what we felt comfortable with in terms of where we would be on user revenue for those 3 years. And by the time the stations we've launched, we start collecting user revenues and the bikes are being used and we have all of our annual members, we'll have a good idea of where we stand. And Justin can come up here and speak to this as well. But we felt like at 3 years, we'd be on really solid footing. And at that time, as Leah said, that Boston, just like Boston, we can do three things after 3 years. We can extend the contract as is. We can negotiate better terms for the city. Or three, we can end the contract at that time. On the third option, we would we have 180 days notice, and we would that would give us enough time, essentially 6 months, to do a new RFP, and we would do a new RFP for a new operator.
And in the, if that happened, that scenario happens, you're saying that after 3 years, only revenues from sponsorships and users will support bike share?
Correct.
Again, no operational.
No local money in.
No general transportation dollars. Or
yes, and if any of those three things happen, we'd be before you again.
Okay. So this is probably my final question. I'm asking on behalf of one of our budget committee members, Donald Wood. I think Commissioner Fish and I both got an email from him yesterday, and he was referring to the Oregonian article, which said, I think the revenue or the cost per month of a bike is $200. Does that figure sound right?
Do you want to talk to that, Justin?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the operating cost. So basically,
so I guess he was saying that seems like a lot of money, and can that be covered through your sponsorships and maybe to your Jersey City experience?
That is actually all covered through user revenue and sponsorship. So the way the contract works is we've been very transparent with the PBOT team, showing our budget based on, you know, we operate Seattle, we operate San Francisco. We have a pretty good idea of what our cost structure will be here in Portland. And basically, all the user revenue and all the sponsorship goes into an account, and we're allowed to take $200 per bike per month out of that account just to cover our costs. That's not our profit. If that money's actually not there, Motivate will invest its own equity to run the system according to the standards of the contract. So that $200 is just coming out of the pool of revenue generated by the system, not at all from the public sector or taxpayer dollars.
And my final question, I guess this is my final question. I was a little confused about the sort of the corporate structure here. So Motivate is owned by...
Yeah, I could talk to the corporate structure. Basically, Motivate is owned by a company called Bikeshare Holdings. It was a holding company set up to make the investment into Alta Bicycle Share last year. The investors in Bicycle Holdings are the principals of the related companies, which is the real estate development company based in New York, and Equinox, which is the fitness company as well. And so, like a typical investment, you usually set up a separate entity to make the investment in an operating company.
Okay, thank you very much.
Questions?
I have three, and as folks may remember, I voted against using the federal money for this project in the first place because I thought there were other safety projects which were a higher priority. I then voted for the ALTA contract because it implements a decision that had been made by council. At that time, I asked PBOT to work on helmets and on instructions to users, particularly downtown, to make sure that they understand where they're allowed to cycle and where they're not allowed to cycle. So could you just talk about those two things?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. So I'll do those in the order you said them. First, with helmets. So as I mentioned before, we have one of the highest helmet usage rates in the country, and we want to manifest that with bike share as well. And luckily, we have a lot of best practices from other cities to go after. So we plan to, with Motivate, provide partnerships through retail outlets, whether that would be a drugstore or also a bike rental shop, which have all expressed interest in doing this, to provide low-cost bike rental to people, to provide people helmets when they buy a membership, especially a free one if you're an equity member or buying a subsidized membership, and also doing a lot of promotion of helmets just throughout kind of our communication channels. Per the direction of council, we actually have been tracking the industry that's trying to develop and actually providing helmet vending out there. I had probably 20 discussions with a company that was made up of MIT graduates called Helmet Hub that was poised to launch in Seattle. That company was never able to realize their vision. And more recently, we've had meetings with a new company called Cranium Technologies, which is a startup in the San Diego area that came up with a demo of their helmet vending machine and demoed that for Margie, myself, and some other staff. Both of those solutions, we feel are works in progress, and I think that we've learned as a city that when we try to sometimes make investments in things that have yet to be tested in other markets, it doesn't always work out for us. And so we really want to make sure that when we provide a helmet solution, that's something that we can back up on. And the contract specifically speaks to Motivate providing us a helmet vending option within 120 days of execution, and then the parties have a time to work out whether we find that's feasible. And then after that, if we cannot come up with an arrangement, then we're going to continue to look on the open market, and we're hoping by that time that Cranium Technologies, which is the only other one aside from Motivate that's providing any sort of helmets, has a solution that that's actually been tested in Santa Monica and some other markets, and we'll be able to go look at them. They've right now been at least saying that they will do it at no cost to the city, but there's a lot of kind of contingencies that we're currently not very comfortable with. So the second question you had was about promoting kind of safety and people following the rules. So we plan to use both the whole bike share system and the bike itself as platforms through which we can communicate safety behavior. And so we're still the Sobi bike has kind of a different configuration than the other bikes that station-based systems in other cities. But we're looking at actually trying to actually integrate that into the architecture of the bike so that someone will actually see if you're a new user. There'll be some place that will actually kind of give you some very punchy, very, I mean, obviously we can't write a treatise on the bike, but we can at least give some very clear direction on where and where not to ride.
Previously, when there were going to be docking stations, there was going to be an opportunity to have the big list of you can't mm-hmm. ride between Jefferson and the downtown area with the sidewalks. So that's not going to happen.
Well, I think that what we're going to just simply say is don't ride on the sidewalk, as opposed to trying to kind of get into kind of the minutiae of that issue. That the issue will be follow traffic laws, don't ride on the sidewalk, you know, yield to other to pedestrians. So it'll be something very simple and kind of more universal.
So that remains a significant concern for me, and I hope that PBOT and the commissioner will look into for downtown putting some signage up, because it's already a problem if we're enticing the interested but concerned to ride. Downtown is a very difficult place to ride a bicycle safely, and I know we have millions of dollars worth of improvements planned, but this system is going to be going into place before those improvements. So we're just after the Orange Line Max celebrations, I was waiting for 45 minutes for a Yellow Line Max because they were all going the other way. And somebody who later told me that he was from East Portland was riding in the Max lane. And, of course, his bike got stuck in the tracks and he fell off and was quite significantly injured. So I'm very concerned that we're going to have even more of that kind of action. It's going to become more and more of a problem. And so I think it's beyond bike share. I think we need to really put some time and effort into and having some outcomes beyond the occasional staying on that particular challenge.
May I just say on the issue of bike share safety that I think that this has been one issue. And I understand that your concern is broader than just the bike share user themselves. But I want to just make sure that the commissioners were clear that the safety record of bike share users is better than private bike users. The crash rate is much, much lower for bike share trips than it is for private bike trips. And part of that is because the bikes have generator lights on the front and back. The posture of the bike is very upright. And if you've ever ridden a bike share bike, you're never going to break a land speed record on a bike share bike. It's built to last. It's not built for speed.
Yeah, and actually I noticed in one of the photographs that you provided to my chief of staff, Tim Crail, that there's a visible number on the rear.
That's correct.
Do they call them mud flaps here, or what do you call the cover at the back wheels? Mud guard?
Both mud flaps and fenders are both used, yes.
Well, there's a clear number. So it actually provides us maybe with a pilot for there now being an identification mark on the bike so that somebody like me who gets almost run over by one will be able to call in and say bike number 360 was on the sidewalk when it shouldn't have been. Right?
Yes.
Correct. So I think that's a good thing. So my final question is about the location of the racks, the docking stations, or whatever that they're now being termed. I understand you're going to have a public process to decide exactly where they are. Will that involve, because you're going to put them on the street, right, rather than on the sidewalks?
I don't want to speak for Motivate, but my understanding is the goal of Motivate is the contract requires them to repay the city for any lost parking meter revenue. So their Motivate is, quote unquote, motivated to avoid that situation, and their plan is not to take any parking. So we'll see them in the furnishing zone where we have space on the sidewalk and on public and private plazas. So probably I imagine we won't have a lot on the street, but we could have some in non-metered areas.
And not in loading zones?
Absolutely not, no.
Right. Thank you.
Thanks. I just one more that I wanted to add that relates to two of the questions you asked is that we will be kicking off our central city infrastructure project in 2016. The timing on that infrastructure project could not be better with the timing of bike share. We're very excited about it. Those of you who participated in the policymakers ride heard a lot about it. And I think the infrastructure that goes into place as part of that project will nicely complement the launch of bike share, hopefully helping with the sidewalk program problem.
Just one more question. So the pay station is on the bike, right? So you insert your credit card.
I'm sorry if I didn't describe that accurately. So there, you can reserve a bike online, and you can check out a bike either with a member card, or if you reserve it online, you'll get an ID number, and you punch that into the pin pad that's on the bike, back of the bike. There's not a credit card reader on the bike. We will have 11 kiosks where we expect to have high walk-up usage, where someone could just slip in a credit card. They'll be very similar to our smart park meters.
Yeah, I was concerned there'd be 600 bikes out there with potential for credit card skimmers. So
yeah, thank you. No, the contract has specific provisions around the standards around that.
Okay. Very good discussion. Any more questions for our resource team here? Thank you all. And Steve, do you have any invited testimony, or are we going to open it up for public testimony?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
I think we have an invitation or two. Okay. Who do we have next?
It's Tom Kilbane from Urban Renaissance Group.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Tom Kilbane, and I manage the Portland office for Urban Renaissance Group, a commercial real estate firm here in Portland. We have a portfolio of about 800,000 square feet of commercial office space, mostly downtown office buildings. I'm involved in the leasing activity at all of our properties, and I can testify to the increasing importance of bicycling has played in office location decisions. When I started out, it was very common for one of the first questions to be asked by a broker is, what's the parking ratio here, meaning how many parking spaces to, the total square foot of the building. Today, car parking seldom comes up, if at all. One of the first questions that the tenant rep brokers now ask is, where's the bike parking? How much bike parking is there? How easy is it to get in and out? One of the reasons for this is that using a bike to get around town is really efficient. The amount of time saved by not having to get your car out of the parking garage, not having to circle the block looking for a parking space is real. It means you have more time to get stuff done, enjoy your lunch, whatever you need to do, and you get some exercise in the process. This happens in our office all the time. We'll have a meeting on the east side or in the Pearl or in Northwest. One of my colleagues will have to drive. I'll take my bike. 100% of the time, I'm there before they are with time to spare. The great thing about the bike share program is that people who don't use a bike to get to work, whether they drive a car, carpool, walk, or take transit, will have the option of getting on a bike to run an errand, to go to an appointment, or to go to a meeting during the day. All this to say that bike share will make locating in downtown Portland even more desirable for companies focused on attracting and retaining talent. Bike share will be one more reason that the suburban tenant down on Cruz Way or out in the Sunset Corridor, or that company considering expanding in some other market, will make the move to Portland. If we want to maintain our reputation as a world-class biking city, then we need a bike share program. Thank you.
Thank you. I think this may be the first time that a commercial realtor has come into this chamber or maybe any other city council chamber and spoken those words about what tenants are looking for in terms of parking. The world has changed.
It absolutely has. It's real.
Thank you. Okay. Others?
That's it for invited testimony.
Oh.
Okay. Then let's go to the sign-up sheet, please, Carla.
Okay. We have 7 people signed up. The first 3, please come on up, are Rob Sadowski, Ian Stude, and Ted Bueller.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, commissioners, for allowing us to share our excitement about bike share.
It's an amazing, amazing transit program, and I suggest you think of it as a transit program. And I'm going to answer a couple of questions that were asked in a different way and share my own experiences. First of all, I've used bike share in many cities, including Munich, which has a system that's very similar to the social bike system, where bikes are around and not in special lock systems. And it's really fabulous. It works really well, and I can answer any questions about what that was like. Think of it as Car2Go versus Zipcar. It's the simplest